The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 24, Text Number 76, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Kikari, recorded on October 24th, 2010, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 24, Text Number 76. Although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshipping Him are very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads this stotra prayer composed and sung by me, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is especially significant that Lord Shiva is a pure devotee of Lord Vasudev, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Amongst all Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the topmost. Consequently, Lord Shiva has a sampradaya, a Vaishnava disciplic succession called the Rudra Sampradaya. At the present moment, those who belong to the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya of the Vaishnavas come from Rudra, Lord Shiva. To become a devotee of Lord Krishna Vasudev is very, very difficult. The word especially used in this connection is dararajham. The worship of the demigods is not very difficult. The becoming a devotee of Lord Vasudev Krishna is not so easy. However, if one adheres to the principles and follows in the footsteps of the higher authorities as advised by Lord Shiva, one can easily become a devotee of Lord Vasudev. This is also confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj. Devotional service cannot be practiced by a mental speculator. Devotional service is a special attainment which can be acquired only by a person who is surrendered unto a pure devotee. As confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, Mahiyasam Pada Rajo Bhishekam Niskinchananam Navrinita Yavat. Thus one accepts the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who is free from all material contamination. One cannot enter into the devotional service of the Lord. Bhagavatam 7532. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Kamala Sri Guru Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raguna Tanvita Dam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha. So easy and difficult. Both things are given. It's easy or it's difficult. So if you know what you're doing, it's easy to be a pure devotee of Krishna. If you know the technique and you follow that system, then it's easy. And what is that technique? One has to surrender unto a pure devotee. You cannot directly approach Krishna, as we have many times stated. The one who is my devotee, Krishna explains to Arjuna, ye me bhakta jana parta na me bhakta stite jana mad bhaktananshi ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. The one who is my devotee, he is not my devotee, but the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So we can agree to become devotee of the devotee. Then it's easy then. But if we try to be devotee on our own, without becoming devotee of devotee, it's very, very difficult. So, by reciting the prayer composed by Lord Shiva, in this way we can become the devotee of Lord Shiva, not as a Shivite, but as a Vaishnava. By using the prayer of Lord Shiva, you see. In that way, we, through the mercy of Lord Shiva, we are able to approach. There are so many great personalities. They have given so many prayers. If we take advantage of their prayers, this is one of the symptoms of a devotee. He recites notable prayers. So if we take advantage of these notable prayers given by great devotees, then by their mercy, we can approach Krishna. Prabhupada explains, devotional service is a special attainment. Something special is not ordinary, it's not everyday, it's unique, it's rare, something special. So that is this that we were studying yesterday in the Nectar of Devotion. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved. But if one knows the actual art, you see, then it's not difficult. It's rare because people are proud. They don't want to take the actual system. They want to independently become a devotee of God without taking shelter of the pure devotee, the spiritual master. Such process is not effective. They want to concoct their own system. They want to manufacture their own way of doing bhakti. But that is not going to be effective. Sampradaya vihina ye mantrashte nishpala matha. Unless one has received mantra through the authorized line of disciplic succession, no fruit, no result. It's like I got that mantra from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Aing, 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 aing. It had no shakti for delivering me. I was trying. I'm just like I felt like an airplane pilot trying to get his plane off the ground. The runway just coming, and the run is like an infinite runway. And no matter how long I was eyeing my spiritual engine, you know, I was just staying on the ground. I couldn't get off. Eyeing, 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 eyeing. When am I going to lift off finally? You know. When you get on an airplane, after a while, it gets enough power to lift off. And break through the clouds and go into the beautiful clear sky, you see. But I was eyeing and eyeing, 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 eyeing. I just keep taxiing down that runway, you see. And not lifting off. So the spiritual master has to be bona fide. He has to be authorized. He cannot be some self-made guru, you see. He has to be authorized. That he has been ordered by a bona fide spiritual master to become guru. Then there is Shakti. Cannot manufacture our own process. It's like these Ritvik people. They want to manufacture their own new system. They bend and twist the words of Srila Prabhupada to suit their own agenda. They think they know better what Prabhupada wants than so many devotees who were directly trained by Prabhupada's instructions. They think they understand Prabhupada better than so many devotees who are directly trained by Srila Prabhupada, you see. Just see the arrogance of these people. So arrogant they are. They weren't even in the movement when Prabhupada was here, and they think they know better what Prabhupada wants than so many devotees who were here being directly instructed by Srila Prabhupada. You see? They should humbly accept that, well, I didn't join the movement when Prabhupada was here, so let me learn from those who were directly trained by Srila Prabhupada. They think, no, I know better than they. I know better than them what Prabhupada wants, even though I never saw him. I never had any correspondence with him. I never could directly ask him a question. But I know better what Prabhupada wants than those people who are directly trained by him. This is not very proper attitude. The authorized representatives of Prabhupada are there, and they don't want to take advantage of that. They're just like somebody who wants to be a devotee without taking advantage of Lord Shiva's prayers, you see. And we are taking advantage. We study them. Prabhupada has given us to study this nice song of Lord Shiva. He's given us for our study. We want to take advantage of those persons who have that advanced position, that advanced understanding, who have the potency to enlighten us and liberate us from the modes of nature in which we are presently very battling it out on a daily basis. A sincere devotee will take help wherever he can get it. He's not proud thinking he doesn't need any help. I'm a great devotee, I don't need any help. No. He knows, I'm struggling. I'm a fallen soul struggling to become Krishna conscious. I'll take whatever help I can get. From wherever it comes, I'm ready, I'm willing. I'm going to take it, every bit of help I can get. So this humility is a very important thing, as we always recite in the Shikshashtakam. Trinadapi sanichena tarorapi sahishnana amani namanadena kirtaniya sadahrihi. That one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind. One should think oneself to be lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others without expecting any respect for himself. In this way, what you can do, you can always chant Hare Krishna. Why? Because you'll have ruchi, you'll have taste. You have to respect the Vaishnavas. If you want to get taste for the name, you have to respect Vaishnavas. If you're disrespectful towards Vaishnavas, your chanting will be a show. It won't be. You will have no taste. You may make a show for some time out of pride. Just say, I'm a great devotee. You see? But in due course of time, unless you actually develop taste for the name, you will give up that chanting. That's a fact. So develop that actual taste for the name. We must become humbled. We must become very respectful. It's not that by blaspheming Vaishnavas I can develop Namaruchi. It's not possible. If I want to actually develop taste, I must worship the devotees within my heart, always thinking, oh, such a nice devotee, such a wonderful soul that devotee is, so sincere, so genuine, so dedicated, you see. That's such an important thing. we have a sincere appreciation for the devotees. It's such an important thing. Every devotee has special saintly qualities. So we should learn how to appreciate the qualities of each and every devotee. And by that, the more we appreciate devotees, that means we're becoming humble. Humble is not a show, but humble is a natural expression of one's love. When you appreciate someone, you're naturally humble in their presence. Naturally humble. Not that you're making a show, I want to show you that I'm humble. That reminds me of that devotee who wrote the letter, the Prabhupada. He said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. Prabhupada wrote him back, he said, you're not the most anything. You're simply insignificant. So Prabhupada could see the pride, and he was advertising, yes, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. I just see Prabhupada how humble I am, you see. See, Prabhupada can detect the mood, the pride there in the way he said, I'm the most fallen. So he smashed him, gave him a good transcendental slap. So we have to become genuinely humble. Sometimes they ask me, how do you become humble? Well, that verse tells you exactly how to become humble. Always be respectful to devotees. And don't expect any respect back. Well, I'll respect you if you'll respect me. That's a business deal. That's a business deal. But that is not Lord Chaitanya's instruction. That you should respect all those devotees who respect you. That's not what he said. No, you respect those even who disrespect you. And that's difficult. I sometimes have devotees who are very disrespectful to me in this movement, I'll be honest. Very, very disrespectful. Offensive to me. I've had many experiences like that. Maybe you have too. A devotee is sometimes very offensive. So, you want to be a true Chaitanyaite, then you have to respect that devotee in spite of that offense. Think, well, it wasn't really his fault. He's simply a delivery boy for my past karmic reactions. Krishna is engaging him to deliver my past sinful reactions to me. You say, what? I thought when you get initiated, all your sins are taken away. How you can say that, Sankarshan Prabhu? No, 99.9% of your sinful reactions are taken away by diksha. But there's still that 0.001%. We deal with, you see, that token reaction from our past sins. So if a devotee is offensive to me, I have to think, well, I was very offensive in the past, and now I'm getting my previous offense neutralized by being offended. So instead of taking offense, take it as mercy. Attitude of gratitude. Always keep an attitude of gratitude for everything that happens to you. It's not easy. It's very, very difficult. It's sometimes extremely difficult to do it, but I can guarantee you one thing. The more you can train yourself to do it, when things in the going gets really, really tough, you see, that you become tough and strong. They say when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So when it's really, really difficult and you actually muster the determination to control your senses and control your mind in periods of great difficulty, that's when you make the most advancement. So devotees who actually know the science of bhakti, they don't avoid difficulties. They take them as a great blessing. They're very grateful. Tatte nukampam su samikshavano punjana evatma kritang vapakam tavagvapurvirvadadang namaste jiveta yomukti pade siddhayabhak. My dear Lord, those devotees who constantly offer you respectful obeisances from within the innermost cores of their heart, even while they are undergoing the most devastating difficulties, simply taking those difficulties as a reaction for their previous sins. For such devotees, they're practically already liberated. They're already liberated, such personalities. So if we can become very, very fixed in transcendental knowledge and always keep our minds in line with the transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, and these great books that Prabhupada has given us. If we can always keep our minds aligned with these great teachings of Srila Prabhupada, then we'll become situated beyond the modes of nature. And I can tell you, that's really sweet up there, beyond the modes. It's really sweet. It's super sweet in that position beyond the modes of nature. So it's worth it. Whatever austerities and penances we may have to go through to achieve that position, transcendental of the modes of nature, it's worth every minute of it. Worth every minute. We don't really know what happiness is yet. You don't even know what it is yet. We have a little glimpse of it in sattvic happiness. Tiny little glimmer, you know, something, but it's some approximation of actual transcendental bliss in sattvic happiness. It's just an approximation. But when we actually enter into that sublime realm of Krishna, pure Krishna consciousness, it's inconceivable. The pleasure that is derived there is inconceivable. Tunde tandavali vriteng vitanute tundavali lamdiye karna karoda kadambani katayate kunar vyude braspriham cheta prangana sangani vijayate sravendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyadviramita krishne tivarnadvai. You know that prayer? Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada is very fond of this verse. In fact, he told George Harrison to make a popular song out of this verse. It's a very, very important verse. I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, have produced. Because when I utter Krishna, it's not just an utterance, that name is dancing in my mouth. And when that name is dancing in my mouth, oh, it's so wonderful. I just want to have millions of mouths. And when those names travel around through the ether and enter the holes of my ears, oh, it's so amazing. I just want to have millions and billions and trillions of ears. And when those names then dance within the courtyard of my heart, my mind becomes completely conquered and I'm stunned in transcendental ecstasy. So this gives us some idea what is transcendental happiness actually like, you see. You may say, well, Sankarshana, what are you talking about? Millions of mouths and millions of ears. What does that mean anyway? Well, let's say you had a wonderful day out on book distribution, you know, and devotees decided to reward you. Wow, you did 10,000 books in one day, and Prabhu, we really... Actually, it happens sometimes. Gopal Krishnamurti can do it. You sell them to a business magnate, you know, 10,000 books in one shot. It happens sometimes. Some big numbers like that. Gopal Krishnamurti is famous for doing that kind of stuff in Delhi, you know, with all these big wealthy people coming to the temple. But anyway, but let's say you somehow or other you distributed 10,000 books. You broke all the records for Denmark. You see. I don't know if you broke India, but you broke all the records for Denmark. The devotee said, "Well, we really want to reward you, Prabhu. Well, this is a great moment in ISKCON history. 10,000 books in one day. We want to give you a special present. Come over here. We have a warehouse. Here, Prabhu. It's just all yours now. Enjoy yourself. 10 million gulab jamuns. Have a good evening. Enjoy yourself. It's a special treat for you. 10 million gulab jamuns." He say, "Well, Prabhu, you know, I really appreciate the sentiment, but I don't have the capacity to enjoy it. I'm sorry, I just don't have the capacity to enjoy 10 million gulab jamuns. Maybe 10 if I really push it, you know. I might push it and enjoy 10 gulab jamuns. But 10 million gulab jamuns? I mean, it's crazy. I could never even think of beginning to enjoy them. So how, what can I do?" I say, "But we have a solution for you, Prabhu. We have gotten a special shakti from the Lord. And we're going to give you 10 million mouths and 10 million bellies, and now you can really enjoy this 10 million gulab jamun." So in this way, we can understand what Rupa Goswami is talking about. The holy name is, of course, this is a crude analogy. Nishigonitai kijai. This is a crude analogy. The holy name of Krishna, those two syllables, Krishna, they are like 10 million gulab jamun, you see. There's so much rasa, there's so much juice, there's so much gulab juice in Krishna that one little mouth and one little set of ears can't begin to get even an insignificant fraction of a 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 fraction of that nectar. So therefore Rupa Goswami is saying there's so much nectar in that Krishna, I got to have millions of mouths and millions of ears, and then I can, you know, I can get at least a more reasonable proportion of that nectar which is available. So this gives us some idea of what it's actually like to be in transcendental happiness, you see. Right now we're struggling, maybe a little sattvic happiness here and then, too much rajasic happiness still, but got to get beyond that. So, by understanding this verse of Rupa Goswami, we can understand what is that transcendental happiness, you see, where you can utter Krishna, and there's so much nectar in that utterance that the universe can't even hold all the nectar. It's like a gulab jamun. You bite into it, the gulab jamun juice squirts out, and it fills up the whole universe and breaks through the shell of the universe. You know, it's like the incredible gulab jamun, you see. It's such a powerful squirt of gulab juice out of that gulab jamun. It just breaks through the coverings of the universe. It completely cracks open the universal coverings, you see. So this gives us some idea of what Krishna contains. And if we're still feeling ourselves to be within the coverings of the universe, that means we haven't really cracked open the name yet, you know, to really get the nectar. We're still just licking the outside of the honey jar without really going inside the jar of honey. So how do we get from our position of, you know, tamasic happiness, rajasic happiness, a little sattvic happiness, and practically no transcendental happiness? How do we get out of this quagmire of being caught up in the modes and get to that position where we can actually relish transcendental bliss? As we studied yesterday, how we can actually dwell at the mercy of the pure devotees. We have to find a pure devotee. We have to surrender to him as our spiritual master. And then, by that mercy, we studied yesterday, there's shelter, initiation, and instructions, orders. Those are the three primary components of how to become fixed in Krishna consciousness, solidly. Take shelter of Guru, get initiated, and follow the orders. Follow faithfully the orders of the spiritual master. That's how we always remain with our spiritual master. That vani presence in the form of the orders. We always remember and follow the instruction, you see. We always think, how would my spiritual master like me to be thinking right now? If my Guru Maharaj could see what's going on inside my brain, would he be very happy? Would he be very disgusted? You see, there's not so much difference. There's this and there's this. It's a big difference. This means, oh, very, very nice, and this means very, oh no, this is bad, disgusting. So, here's the secret, that if you always keep your heart very chaste and clean, always thinking in a very sweet and wonderful Krishna conscious ways, according to the orders of Guru, Sadhus, and Shastra, then your spiritual master will become very happy. He will actually move into your heart. He will take up residence within your heart. And that way you can constantly associate with your spiritual master. So we simply have to make our hearts clean. And when the heart is clean, then naturally the words will be very, very nice. When the words come out of our mouth, they'll be very sweet. They'll be very nectarian words. Sweeter than the sweetest honey. If one's heart is clean, when he speaks, his speech will be very attractive and very pleasing. It'll be poetic. He will speak poetically. And then his actions will become ideal. Adyad yadacharati shreshtas tattareve tarojana. So yat pramanam krute lokastadunavartate. Whatever the great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So, how many acharyas did Prabhupada won in ISKCON? The Vritviks say, only one. Only Prabhupada should be acharya, no one else. That is the Vritvik philosophy. But what did Prabhupada tell us in Mayapur back in the 70s? He said, now we are 10,000, and then we will grow to 100,000, and then we will grow to 1 million, and then to 10 million. And Prabhupada said, there will be no scarcity of acharyas. So what does that mean? You are ISKCON members. That means Prabhupada wants you to become acharya. An ideal, a living embodiment of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He wants every one of us to become a living embodiment of this philosophy. So that by our example we can inspire everyone, the whole world, to take up Krishna consciousness. Our mission is to save the whole world. So how are we going to do that? We have to save ourselves. Actually, I came to our movement like that. I was back in the countercultural days. We were thinking we got to save the world. The countercultural youth, hippie movement. We were thinking, yeah, we have to change the world. We got to save it. Love and peace, you know. It was like save the world consciousness back in the 60s. All the hippies, they were thinking, yeah, we got to save the world. Peace, peace, peace. Let's make peace in the world. Save the world, you see. So there I was writing songs, trying to save the world by writing songs, but I finally realized, how can I save the world? I hadn't even saved myself. You see? But then I saw this Prabhupada, you see, Srila Prabhupada. He is truly engaged in saving the world. You see? So let me simply help Prabhupada in his mission. You see, that is the real saving of the world. You see? So, individually we cannot, but if we collectively serve the orders of Srila Prabhupada, then as a movement, we as a collective body of devotees serving Srila Prabhupada, we as a group can save the world. That's the thing. But our movement will only be successful in saving the world to the extent that the members have truly saved themselves from what? Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. In other words, the influence of the modes of nature. We have to save ourselves from the influence of the modes by taking advantage of those devotees who are more advanced than us, because that the more we can associate with devotees who are more advanced, that helps us to advance. In India, we see this system as a material example. Perhaps you have seen when you visit India, but I have seen many times. The bicycle riders, they may have a very long way to pedal from the village into the town to go to their job, you see. So they just grab onto one truck or one bus and they get a free ride. And their bicycle, and they're holding it, you see. In the Western countries, you cannot do immediately. The police will arrest you. You cannot do that. And in India, no problem. So, in this way, we just have to grab on to the senior devotees. We have to find a spiritual master, an advanced in Krishna consciousness, and we have to hold on to him. And all the others also, we can take advantage of them as well. We have to take advantage of advanced devotees, senior devotees, grab a hold of them, so whatever speed they're traveling, we'll be traveling the same speed just by grabbing a hold of them, you see. Just by taking shelter of advanced devotees, solidly taking shelter of them, then you travel at the same speed they're traveling. This is the insider secret. If I had to quickly advance in Krishna consciousness, take shelter of advanced devotees and automatically you advance just by that shelter. You advance at the same, you travel the same speed they do, at least in the analogy. But it does. You, even in the actual situation, you advance very quickly in Krishna consciousness by taking shelter of advanced devotees. That's fine. So I do that. There are many, many godbrothers I know. I can study their symptoms. I can see they're very advanced in Krishna consciousness. So within my heart, I'm always, whenever I have a chance to associate with them, I do. And within my heart, I'm always meditating on their saintly qualities and appreciating them. Sometimes, you know, emailing them in this way, having some relationship. In this way, by then I get the benefit of their association, even if they're not physically present, just by appreciating them within my heart. Then I get that blessing of their sangha. So this is the mood of the Vaishnava. We see this in Narottam Das Thakur. Ramachandra Sangha Mage Narottama Das. I, Narottam, am always hankering for that association, that sangha of Ramachandra Chakravarti. So this is the mood of a devotee. He worships his Prabhus. He worships his godbrothers, associate devotees. How dear they are to my heart. He never takes them as ordinary persons of this world. He takes them as great manifestations of Krishna's mercy. And in this way, then he gets the blessing. Whatever progress they have made, he's able to take advantage of them. I'll give you an example in this connection. Let's say there's some devotee who really plays a fantastic madanga. I mean, really, really good madanga. And I'm a crummy madanga player. I can't play worth a darn. So, you know, I get really envious when I see him over there playing madanga. I think, yeah, but he must be really puffed up. He must be really puffed up because he plays madanga so well. Yeah, he's puffed up. So will I ever become a good madanga player if I have that attitude towards him? No way. Krishna will never let me be a good madanga player because I don't appreciate those who are actually good. But if I think, oh, just see how much love he has for Krishna, how much love he has for kirtan. He puts his heart and soul into it so much that he's able to play the madanga. It's practically like part of his body. He plays it with such feeling, such sweetness. You see, If I appreciate that devotee's, but then, well, Krishna, yes, then I'll be, Krishna will bless me, I can learn to play too. So instead of being envious of a devotee who manifests advanced qualities, expertise in his service, you should always appreciate. Just see how expert that devotee is in this service, in the puja, or the preaching, or the book distribution, or whatever it may be. Just see how expert he is. Just see how sincere that devotee is, that he has developed such a great talent, you see, in that particular way. So if we have this kind of vision, then whatever we're appreciating in the other devotee, Krishna will give that to us also. He'll give it to us as well. So these are some of the insider secrets of how to advance very, very quickly in Krishna consciousness. We have a few minutes left now. If there's any questions, I will try to answer them. Yes?
Maharaj, you are saying that we should appreciate the devotee all the time.
Yeah.
His qualities, etc. But by the experience, I know sometimes it's very difficult due to the influence of moods of material nature to associate with some devotees because of different natures.
I'm missing a lot of the words due to my defective hearing. So you're saying it's... Let me see if I can understand your question. You understand and appreciate this principle that we should appreciate devotees, but you're saying practically it's difficult to do that.
Sometimes
difficult. You want to know how to overcome the difficulty?
Yeah.
Yes. What I find is really... the easy way to do it is just think, how would Prabhupada see this devotee? What would Prabhupada's vision be of this devotee? I mean, I've had some run-ins with some of my godbrothers that were pretty nasty. But, you know, you think, well, I don't know if I ever want to see him ever again, you know. Maybe if I'm in Vrindavan, during Kartik, I'll go the other way so I don't cross. You know, it's like that bad. I don't want to even cross paths with them. You know, I mean, you know, I've had some of the experiences like that. But I conquer over that by thinking, but how would Prabhupada see this person? You see? And let me forget about whatever bad experience I had with them and just think, but how would Prabhupada appreciate the decades of service this person has rendered to his movement? You see? So in this way, I find that's very helpful, to think, how would Prabhupada see this person? Forget me, with my consciousness within the modes of nature. Obviously, my vision is imperfect, but how would that person with the perfect vision, his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, see this person? You see? I find that's a really good technique. How would Prabhupada see this person? Any other questions? All right. Okay, one question more. All right.
I have a question from last evening. We was asked, does everything belong to Krishna? And then I was thinking after that, does my mind come from Krishna?
Yes, your mind is also Krishna's property. Therefore, you must engage your mind in Krishna's service.
Okay.
If you take your mind on a little, escapade, wandering down sense gratification lane, then you're a thief. You see? It's like a brahmachari. He's really dedicated to following his vows, but yet sometimes the mind gets a little loose and he starts thinking about girls or something like that. It's not proper, you see. Not proper. That means you think that your mind belongs to you. You see, your point is very nice, that the mind is the property of Krishna. It's a very nice point you've made. I appreciate that point a lot. We have to understand this mind is not my property. Near Mama, nothing is mine. This mind belongs to Krishna. Therefore, this mind is meant to be engaged 24/7 in the service of Krishna. I have nothing of my own, except the foolish idea that I have something of my own. So in this way, it's very good to see that Krishna is the owner of the mind, therefore the mind must be engaged in hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna 24 hours a day. Anything else? All right, then. One more.
This is practical for today. Not philosophical, but you'll be given the Sunday lecture.
Sunday?
Lecture. You'll be given the Sunday lecture. And also after the lecture and after prasadam, we normally have like 1 or 2 hours where we sit down with guests and have question and answer.
Yes, I'm scheduled to do that too.
That too often.
I've been informed of that, yeah. Yeah. So I have to basically give the lecture that I'm going to go by. I have to do, it may be a little bit delayed for the question and answer, but I will come. Because I have to, we have our deities. I have to offer the arati and put them to rest. After the lecture, I'll go do puja and then come back for the questions and answers.
Is it not practical?
Huh?
Is it not practical to have question and answers right after the lecture?
I don't. That's up to the local management. It's not mine. Department.
It's nice, but this, there'll be a little time for also some questions, but this is...
If we could do it all in one shot, then I could... But no, I'm just here plugging into the local, whatever is the local system, I'm plugging into them. Now, if they feel they can adjust it, I'm willing to accept it. If they don't feel like they can adjust it, I can accept that too. I'm transcendental. I'm willing to take that inconvenience for the sake of, if it's necessary, for the sake of the schedule.
That's why everything gets late.
I don't know if it's practical to, because...
that's what I'm asking.
She's asking, is it practical to have to take the lecture and the questions and answers in one shot? I have no way of knowing. That's up to them to say.
Normally we have this... It might go on for like 1 hour, 2 hours. It's kind of a little...
And then people leave before they even take Vishadam.
Yeah,
I don't see that it's practical.
It's kind of informal, a little more informal.
Doesn't seem to me that it would be practical to have another hour of question and answer after the lecture. And then where's the feast? People will go home, they don't even get the feast.
Yeah. People will take the feast and go home too.
Yeah, most will.
Oh, you mean during the feast itself? Because
yeah.
After the lecture, immediately there's a feast or there's an arti?
Arti, and then there's
after the lecture, is there the feast is served immediately or there's an?
Then there's arti.
There's arati, okay.
And then there's prasadam.
And then there's prasadam. So what is your idea?
No, but it's not that, it's not that everyone stays for this question. Mm-hmm. Everyone will not be there for the question.
Yeah, it's always just a small...
Serious about Krishna consciousness.
So I'm prepared to, even for the sake of the preaching, to skip the feast just so I can just give the lecture, go to the puja, then come back and do the questions and answers. Or at least postpone the feast. Maybe I can get something later at the end. Okay, so very good. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.